Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. For a time, it was reported that one of the American ex-hostages would stay behind with his German wife. But now, reports John Sheehan from Wiesbaden, the Americans are planning to fly as a group toward the reunion, apparently at West Point, tomorrow with their families.
State Department spokesman John Cannon told reporters that all 52 of the former hostages will be returning to the United States tomorrow, but the government cordon insulating the returned Americans from news people will continue. According to Dr. Jerome Korshak, head of the medical team examining the freed Americans, one of the greatest needs of the ex-hostages is to tell about their experiences in captivity. A few have come to the hospital gates to talk with reporters, but are forced to stand out in sub-freezing weather to do so. State Department officials have refused to make the department's briefing room available to former hostages who want to recount what happened to them. Two of the returnees stepped to the hospital gate today and were promptly mobbed by reporters and photographers. Officials have backtracked on their earlier account of the returnees' meeting with former President Carter. The first version was that there had been no bitterness or resentment expressed about U.S. government actions during the hostage crisis. John Sheehan, CBS News, Wiesbaden.
Former Secretary of State Cyrus Vance, who headed the U.S. mission that met the ex-hostages in Germany, has returned to this country to be met by David Andelman in New York.
Former Secretary of State Cyrus Vance said that he and other officials who met extensively with the 52 Americans in West Germany were appalled at the scope of atrocities committed by their Iranian captors. Mr. Vance met for nearly 3 hours with all 52 former hostages before he left Wiesbaden. He arrived at Kennedy Airport last night and described the treatment of the ex-hostages.
It is really barbaric treatment that was carried out against them.
How much indication did you have of this before these hostages came home?
Some indication of this, but the breadth and extent of it is larger.
The former hostages were also divided, he said, over a number of key issues that surrounded their captivity, the American handling of the negotiations, even his own role and his resignation last year in protest over the abortive attempt to rescue the hostages. Mr. Vance said he was questioned closely by the 52 Americans over these issues, but there was no hostility on their part toward the Carter administration. He also said that the former hostages were divided over whether the United States should honor the agreement negotiated with the Iranians that won their release. But Mr. Vance declined to offer any suggestions to the Reagan administration on this question. David Andelman, CBS News, New York.
At West Point, preparations for the reunion of the former hostages and their families are in full swing. Streets of the village are festooned with yellow ribbons and flags, and the hotel that houses Academy visitors has been taken over by the State Department for the exclusive use of the 52 returnees and their families. Families of the liberated hostages are flying into Washington today from around the country. There is still speculation President Reagan may meet with them before they fly on to West Point tomorrow, but he will delay his welcome for the returned hostages themselves until Tuesday. Leslie Stahl has more from the White House.
At the White House, the president and his top advisors are organizing a plan for dealing with the 52 Americans and their families once they've been reunited at West Point on Sunday. Aides say Mr. Reagan is concerned about their personal welfare and has been asking both the hostages and their families what they want him to do. Meanwhile, the doctors examining the 52 in Wiesbaden are sending messages back that some of them are not in such good shape. One official said, they're in worse medical and emotional condition than we thought, and we're being advised that they need some more decompression time. Because of that, Mr. Reagan has decided not to go to West Point on Sunday when the 52 arrive and see their families for the first time. They'll be allowed a day of privacy. News coverage of the reunion will be extremely limited. Mr. Reagan does plan to invite them all to the White House on Tuesday. Today, the president is holding a cabinet meeting. Presumably, the hostages and the situation in Iran will be discussed. But White House spokesman James Brady told reporters jokingly that the president was holding the Saturday meeting if for no other reason than to tell members of the cabinet that it will never happen again. Leslie Stahl, CBS News, the White House.
CBS News has been told that Mr. Reagan is preparing a strong statement on the U.S. attitude toward future hostage seizures to be issued probably in connection with the Tuesday events. An American is now being held hostage in Colombia, linguist Charles Bitterman seized on Monday. His leftist captors have threatened in a letter to President Reagan to kill him unless an American language institute in Bogota is closed down. The letter, published in the Bogota newspaper yesterday, says, "His life is in your hands, Mr. President." Again, Poland's independent labor unions and the government are on an apparent collision course. Bert Quint reports from Warsaw.
Millions of Polish workers heeded the appeal of labor leader Lech Wałęsa rather than government threats to dock their salaries and stayed away from work today. The unions call today and every Saturday free days, just like Sundays. The government insists that unless it authorizes a Saturday off, as it has been doing twice a month, people must work as usual. Wałęsa, in telexed messages to independent unions, had said, "Let there be no mistake, January 24th is not a work day." Warsaw indeed took on the appearance of a Sunday. Many more people stayed home this time than on the one previous Saturday that the unions took off without permission. The red and white strike flag flew from buildings. Banners went up saying the Baltic Coast Agreements must be respected. This is the most pressing problem on the Polish labor front at the moment, but by no means the only one. Other issues, such as the government's refusal to legalize an association of rural unions and to free several dissidents jailed last fall, have added to a growing hostility between the unions and the regime and a growing feeling of unease in Poland. Bert Quint, CBS News, Warsaw.
In China, the decision on the Gang of Four and their associates is now finally imminent. Bruce Dunning reports.
The top story on Peking Television's evening news was, watch this station tomorrow for the verdict in the trial of Jiang Cheng. After weeks of waiting, the special court will pronounce sentence on one woman and nine men who once held almost total control over the billion people of China. Mao Zedong's widow and nine other leaders of the Cultural Revolution are accused of all the excesses of that event, torture, persecution, murder, plotting to assassinate Mao himself. According to diplomatic sources, disagreements arose over whether Jiang Cheng should be executed. Older leaders like Vice Chairman Deng Xiaoping, now the strongman in Chinese politics, reportedly counseled against executing her on grounds that it might make a martyr of her. From the beginning, however, it has been assumed that all 10 would be found guilty. The other day, when I asked a well-placed Chinese official whether the verdict would be guilty, she smiled and said, "Of course." Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Peking.
A major earthquake measuring 6.9 on the Richter scale hit a relatively unpopulated area of China today. Still, one remote mountain town was devastated, and officials report more than 100 people killed. South Korea's President Chun Doo-hwan has made a second move to improve his country's image before his U.S. visit. Chun today ended the 15 months of martial law in South Korea, effective midnight Korean time, and announced that elections will be held next month. Earlier, he commuted to life in prison, the death sentence given dissident Kim Dae-jung. Members of Britain's opposition Labour Party are meeting today on a new method of choosing the leaders of the party. And The Prospect reports Dan Revive is for party-rending disagreement.
This one-day conference could lead to a split in the Labour Party, which has 267 seats in Parliament, about 40% of the House of Commons. As many as 12 right-wing members are threatening to leave the party if this conference approves a new left-wing plan for the method of electing a party leader. The existing method allows Labour Party members of Parliament to choose the leader. The left-wingers want trade unions to take part in the process, as well as all card-carrying members of Labour, the so-called constituents. The left-wing plan would give 40% of the votes to the unions, 30% to the constituents, and only 30% to the members of Parliament. The right-wingers include former Foreign Secretary David Owen, and the Labour Party does not want to lose him, so a compromise is likely to emerge. Something between that left-wing plan and Owen's argument to keep the present system. Dan Revive, CBS News, London.
At Lake Wishon in the Sierra Mountains, a platform collapsed early today in a 1,000-foot-deep chamber of a hydroelectric plant under construction. It's feared as many as 9 workers plunged to their deaths. Samuel Barber, the highly acclaimed American composer of many orchestral works and operas, including the opera Vanessa, died yesterday at his New York home. Barber was 70. Unseasonably warm weather is expected to continue today in the Central Plains and the Southern Rockies, with temperatures climbing well into the 60s. It was 69 degrees yesterday in Grand Island, Nebraska.